Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, proud of its ties to Alaska communities since 1977. More at alyeskapipeline.com.
Hello, and welcome to Line One, Your Health Connection. I'm your host, Dr. Jillian Woodruff. Endometriosis affects about 1 in 10 women, but many go years without a diagnosis, often told their symptoms are just a bad period. Uterine fibroids, on the other hand, are more common, often easier to diagnose, affecting up to 80% of women by age 50, according to the National Institutes of Health. But even with a diagnosis, many patients may not be offered the full range of treatment options, or maybe feel hesitant to move forward when the options presented don't align with their goals. So while these are two very different conditions, they lead to a similar outcome, a delay in effective treatment. Over time, both conditions can lead to chronic pelvic pain, pain with intimacy, bowel or bladder symptoms, anemia, fertility challenges, and a negative impact on quality of life. Today, joining us are two physicians working to change that here in Alaska. Dr. Matthew Lindemann is a board-certified obstetrician, gynecologist, and founder of Borealis Life, the laparoscopic institute for fibroids and endometriosis, the only practice in Alaska dedicated specifically to the care of patients with these conditions. He brings more than 25 years of experience in advanced surgical expertise in minimally invasive gynecologic surgery. He's joined by Dr. Shiloh Small, also a board-certified obstetrician-gynecologist, whose work is grounded in a healing-centered, trauma-informed approach to care. Dr. Small is Northern Cheyenne and served Alaska Native communities at Alaska Native Medical Center for many years before joining Borealis Life, where she now focuses on treating fibroids and endometriosis while creating care environments built on trust, respect, and whole-person healing. Dr. Lindemann and Dr. Small, welcome.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here.
Thank you. Let's start with Dr. Lindemann. You are no stranger to Line One, but let's have you reintroduce yourself to our listeners and tell us what drew you to further specialize in advanced care for endometriosis and fibroids.
Yes, thank you, Dr. Woodruff. It's great to be back. It was a couple of years ago, I think we had our initial conversation, and I'm super excited to be back and talking to you and your audience again about what we're doing and kind of the advances we've made. So I did my initial residency training at a place where we did a lot of laparoscopy and was fortunate enough to develop a certain skill set in that regard. And that lended me to have the opportunity to see a lot of patients with endometriosis. And over time, I developed just a real interest in understanding like, this is something that is very undertreated and underappreciated, and that women suffer tremendously. And then additionally, I believe my daughter has endometriosis. She's not, you know, didn't have a surgery before, but I think I'm pretty confident that's what she has. So I have a special personal interest in people that are suffering with endometriosis. So then that led me to understand about 5 years ago that probably Alaska deserved a clinic that specialized in this specifically. So I founded Borealis Life about just under 3 years ago. So that's how I came to this. And it's been super rewarding. So many patients are so wonderful and demonstrate so much courage and strength. And it's a great privilege and very rewarding field.
Yeah, and exactly. And I think you brought up something that we'll talk about later when you mentioned your daughter not having surgery. So when we get into endometriosis, we're going to talk about why you said that, why you distinguish that she didn't have the surgery yet. Yeah. Well, building on that, share us about how this concept for Borealis Life came up. What makes it different than a traditional gynecology clinic?
I think there are multiple things. Really, it was designed from the ground up to be specifically for women with menstrual dysfunction, women, people that are used to being kind of ignored and gaslit. All of my staff are trauma-informed, and our approach to patient care is to create a safe environment where people feel empowered and validated. So the approach is unique, just the approach, but also the everybody in my whole office is on the same page for this. And also that I've developed a network of like-minded other professionals so we can create a comprehensive treatment program, because endometriosis, I think we'll get to a bit, it's not just a pelvic disease, it's a full body disease and requires multiple different specialties to kind of treat it comprehensively. And people do better if there's a comprehensive treatment plan versus one person treating one thing and then eventually somebody else treats something else. By the time they treat that, then the other thing has kind of come back. So it's better to have a comprehensive model. And then additionally, I think we have a unique like surgical skill set that allows us to best to treat these diseases, which can be very tricky and very complicated. And and then I think it's really important that we offer a individualized treatment plan. So we try really hard to have a narrative approach, so we get the patient's story and provide hopefully some, validation and empowerment. And then I really take great pride in crafting a distinct treatment program that's in line with each person's experience. So I think it's a very important part of what we're able to do at a specialty clinic.
I love that individualized care. You know, every patient is going to be different. And so addressing that is important.
In a true shared medical decision making, I think we use term a lot, but we really try to put these things into practice. So, there's things that I know about this condition that other people, that patients might not know, but there's lots of things that patients know about their condition that I don't know. So the best thing is we put all this information together, and together we can create a treatment plan that we both feel safe and comfortable with.
Yes, shared medical decision making. And to have that, you do need to understand all of the options and understand more about the condition, which takes a lot of time to do. You know, that's not an easy thing. And I think sometimes patients don't come away knowing as much as they could about their condition and the options available. So I see that in your practice, if you have that time that you've allotted to the education aspect.
That's very important to us. In fact, we have two nurse case managers that spend a lot of time. They call patients before their visit, welcome them to the clinic, get the basic information, make sure we have all the records, and then meet the patient when they come in for the initial visit. So patients will have probably an hour of time with our nurse case managers before they even see a doctor. It gives them time to express their whole story, talk about all the different symptoms, which patients might not even know sometimes are even related to endometriosis. There's so such a diverse set of symptoms that we can recognize as being related, but patients might not even know that their headaches might be related to their periods.
Absolutely, absolutely. Let's bring you in, Dr. Small, and tell us a bit about yourself and your background.
Sure. Again, thanks for having me. It's an honor to be here and talking with you this morning. I grew up on the Northern Cheyenne Reservation, and I decided to go into healthcare, but specifically working with women and just supporting women because I feel like they're holding our communities together. I, like Dr. Lindemann, in residency, had a really strong surgical background and training. But I've been in Alaska for almost 14 years. I had been working at South Central Foundation and Alaska Native Medical Center before I came to Borealis Life to work with Dr. Lindemann. And that's been recent. In January, moved over. But I met him at a conference at AAGL and just was very inspired by what he was doing. And I think it just was meant to be. And it's great work, and what his clinic and his staff, everything has just been amazing so far. It's almost too good to be true what he's doing for
Oh,
patients.
yes. Well, Dr. Lindemann is quite dynamic, so I can see how you would have been drawn in. And you were at AAGL's, the Gynecologic Laparoscopy Conference. Okay, just for those who may not be familiar. So both of you are very interested in or have a passion for surgical care as well.
Specifically minimally invasive surgeries. Women just do so much better with those, and just I think it's great to be able to offer that.
Yes, absolutely. And what have you found to be different about working so far in the specialty clinic versus doing general OBGYN? Besides, you're not delivering babies, or are you still delivering babies?
No, I've moved away from obstetrics, and it's allowed me to focus more on gynecologic care, getting my minimally invasive gynecologic surgery designation. And working on that, and specifically helping women with pelvic pain has been really rewarding. So I'm very happy with the direction things are going.
And that's a very difficult field, I think, when you're thinking about women who've had pelvic pain, and specifically chronic pelvic pain, there have been very limited options for them.
Yes, and there a lot of times we don't, as healthcare providers, do a great job at listening, and we sometimes have our own agenda, and sometimes we just have to take a step back and listen.
Yeah, listening is the key. Mm-hmm. Yes, excellent. So what else have you found different about working at Borealis Life versus working with your, really, the Alaska Native community in general, or have you seen a lot of fibroids and endometriosis in the Alaska Native community disproportionate to the general community?
I don't think it's disproportionate, but we definitely, you know, I definitely saw them, you know, saw those issues there. I just have, I feel like now more time and a more comprehensive approach, which is, you know, been a lot better for me and for me to see how that helps patients. But to do that, I really had to move away from obstetrics and kind of open up that space to be able to help women, but it's been very rewarding for me.
Right. Absolutely. You do need to open up that space because endometriosis care and fibroid care is really complex, and complex also is chronic pelvic pain. That's even more complex. So Dr. Lindemann, you've described endometriosis as a systemic disease, not just a pelvic condition. Can you help us understand more about what endometriosis is and what that really means?
Yeah, endometriosis is where the cells that are normally in the lining of the uterus, those are called endometrial cells. They can appear in other areas of the body, normally in the pelvis, but can be really any place in lungs and upper abdomen and brain and all kinds of different places. So that can cause a systemic inflammatory reaction. So the immune system is attacking these cells that aren't where they're supposed to be and can cause inflammation in the abdomen, which can cause bloating and constipation and GI symptoms, as well as bladder symptoms, like almost feel like a bladder infection, but you go to the doctor and then it can't even find a bladder infection. So it's like a frequency urgency. And then this immune response can get into your bloodstream. So people with endometriosis tend to have elevated levels of inflammatory markers like CRP and sed rate. And then it can cause a lot of different systemic symptoms. It can cause joint pain, cause headaches, can really cause a very profound fatigue that I think is specifically underappreciated. I think any personally, like you're going to hear some of my biases, but it's really based on understanding of my conversations with my patients. There's a profound fatigue. In fact, I've always said, like, I think it should have a different word, and the fatigue related to endometriosis, because you say the word fatigue and everyone's kind of been tired before, but the fatigue that women with endometriosis really experience is a totally different level. So I personally think that if any woman is complaining of severe fatigue of menstrual age, someone needs to ask them about their periods. So it just, because women don't know to make that connection. So we need to help people try to make that connection. So and there's an article in National Geographic recently that was helping highlight some of these things too. So I appreciate that there's more and more information out there for women to better understand what's going on with their bodies. And because it's a systemic disease, it deserves like a comprehensive systemic approach and not just, you know, a laparoscopy to diagnose endometriosis and then, you know, good luck with that. Or here's these pills to put you into menopause for, you know, 2 years. Like those are, there's other options that we can do to better help people in ways that are kind of feel safe for them.
Yeah, I think, you know, that's what I see in my gynecology practice. When patients come in that have been diagnosed with endometriosis, they're often told, oh, just take these birth control pills and that's it. And they may have many of these other symptoms, but their issue of the heavy period or the pain with the period may have subsided. and these other symptoms that they have continue. So I think that's really important that you've mentioned all of these symptoms and that this is a systemic, highly inflammatory condition. And so it's going to take more than one treatment approach. Many of these symptoms you mentioned, though, they sound like symptoms of perimenopause, you know, which is what I talk about a lot. So.
Right. Mm-hmm. So there's overlap for sure. And I think that's one of the reasons it takes, you know, like a specialty mindset towards this, because they are nuanced, difficult decisions at times. And the ability to kind of process that information just comes with more and more time spent listening to patients and helping patients. And, you know, in your practice, you do a great job with everything, but specifically hormone management. And I appreciate your skill with that. And I think that you can, you know, we understand, like, if you go to somebody who barely ever does hormone management, like, they're going to have a less nuanced approach to getting things dialed in as, you know, as well as somebody who does that, like you, who does that all the time. So, you know, there is overlap between these things. And that's why we have, it's better to have a nuanced approach with more experience and also be willing to kind of share things with each other. Like, if there's a problem that I think I'm getting into that I'm maybe not an expert, then to feel like they should take the ego out of this. And if there's somebody else that you know that can have a, you know, offer some suggestions, then that's great. You know,
right.
I always say, like, I just want people to feel better. It doesn't matter if I'm the one that helps them feel better, if somebody else is the one to do that. And I think that you would say that too. Like, if somebody else is going to do this, then I can feel rewarded just, you know, just seeing people get better.
Right. Absolutely. And, you know, just, it takes a village.
Yeah, it really does.
And use your resources. Yes. Well, you mentioned symptoms. You mentioned bloating and constipation, pain, painful periods. Are you seeing these symptoms mostly with the period, or are you seeing these outside of the period? And anything that people may not think of when they're thinking of endometriosis symptoms, like profound fatigue, anything else?
I wanted to mention too that this can turn into like a pain syndrome at times, and you'll start feeling like paresthesias. And I want people to be aware of this. There is a pain that can run down the front of the legs or the side of the legs. It's not the sciatica goes down the back, and you can get that with endometriosis, but more typical pain is shooting down the front or the side of the legs. And that indicates not necessarily that the nerves are involved with endometriosis, but that then there's been a neurogenic activation from the chronic disease state. So sometimes we need to get pain specialists, potentially such as your husband, involved in things like this too. So the constipation isn't necessarily, sometimes it can be more with the period, not necessarily. Same thing with the bloating. The bloating is a very profound thing. And when you say the word bloating, if you never experienced severe bloating, you might not understand the significance of that. Just like, I think if you say the word hot flash, if you never experienced one or talk to someone who's experienced it, you might say, well, it doesn't sound like a very scary word. Like, that doesn't sound like something that would be that disruptive. But I think you can attest that those can be very disruptive and, you know, cause, like, when you're severely bloated, you don't feel like working out. You don't feel like going out. You don't feel like going fishing or snow machining or any of those things. Like, you just want to be at home. And it really can, even that one symptom can start to disrupt your life quite a bit. It isn't necessarily, sometimes it does correlate with the period, but not necessarily.
Thank you for sharing that. And yes, I have heard about, you know, the treatments from my husband about pain and chronic pain. And I don't think it's really a first line thought to see a pain physician, because I think many times women especially, I think, are told that their symptoms should be dealt with. And so they don't really seek care sometimes, especially after they have that diagnosis. They think this is just something that you have to deal with.
Right, right. No, I think that, you know, we think we need to figure out the endometriosis part of it, but also mm-hmm. there can be additional issues with nerves that have been used to being stimulated for so long that even once we treat the endometriosis, there can be residual neurogenic nerve pain that would really take a specialist to help figure that out.
Let's go to a caller. We have Debbie from Toke that is going to tell us about an experience that she had. Welcome to Line One, Debbie.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Thank you.
I just wanted to say that I'm so glad that you guys are doing this. You know, Dr. Small and Dr. Lindemann, this clinic, I think, will be a really good thing for the state of Alaska. Because, you know, when I was in my 20s and 30s, I had these heavy periods. you know, it caused sleep deprivation, and I had some mood disorders. And, you know, it was really funny because you talked about that lower abdominal pain, that it didn't run down the back of my leg. It did run down the front of my legs. And it was so debilitating at times, you know, that I'd spend a day or two in bed because I couldn't do anything. Excuse me. But I am so happy that you guys are doing this, and I hope women take advantage of it. And I know that, you know, because I'm a physician assistant, and I know that I'll be encouraging my patients to go see you guys, because I have young women who come in, you know, with these symptoms, and, you know, referring them to some of the gynecologists, it just seems like we get blown off so much of the time.
Well, thank you for sharing that and for calling in. And, you know, that is disappointing that you would not be taken seriously even, you know, within the medical community. So I think what Dr. Lindemann and Dr. Small are doing does need that encouragement from you. So thank you. And for them to be able to not only be a service to women, but really to providers, to gynecologists, even like myself, who may not treat as much endometriosis or fibroids that you do. So that education, and especially as things continue to change, you know, there's a lot of progress. Mm-hmm. And so sharing that with people who may not have this as their specialty is important. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We are going to move into a break, but maybe just before we go to that break, you can maybe answer why you think it takes so long for some women to be diagnosed with endometriosis.
So I can speak to that. I think with having our own agenda going into a room and not really listening to patients, maybe looking at just imaging or labs and not finding out what the patient is there for or what their goals are, talking over patients, telling patients like this is, you know, this is normal or fine, when really missing work or school is not fine. If you're having heavy bleeding, it's heavy to you. You get to decide that, not me. So I think some of those things are the, you know, probably some of the reasons why women aren't getting listened to or heard.
And how do you distinguish between this is a, you know, a heavy period? Some people have heavier than others that may not be endometriosis, or many times it's not, thank goodness, yeah. Right? But then how do you distinguish between this is something pathologic or bad versus, you know, needing to look forward or having it be
sure
normal?
I mean, you know,
or typical, I should say.
Ultrasounds, imaging, labs, those are helpful. But also if it's disrupting women's lives, if they are telling me that they're having heavy periods, I'm going to believe them. I'm not going to ask them to, you know, measure pads or anything like that. I'm going to take their word for it, because they're coming, taking time out of their busy lives to come see me for a specific problem. And that's what I'm going to address.
So you're taking that serious. That mm-hmm. is pathologic. That is something
yes.
bad. If they're telling
yes.
you,
yes.
okay, that it does not feel normal to them.
Right.
Okay, I like to hear that. Well, that helps to frame it so clearly. And we need to go to our first break, and we'll continue our conversation when we get back. You are listening to Line One, Your Health Connection. After this short break, we will continue our discussion of endometriosis and shift focus to fibroids with Dr. Matt Lindemann and Dr. Shiloh Small as Line One continues statewide. Welcome back to Line One, Your Health Connection on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Dr. Jillian Woodruff. I'm joined today by Dr. Matthew Lindemann, a board-certified obstetrician-gynecologist and founder of Borealis Life, the laparoscopic institute for fibroids and endometriosis, with locations in Anchorage and Wasilla. He's a surgeon with extensive experience in minimally invasive gynecologic procedures. Also with us is Dr. Shiloh Small, also a board-certified obstetrician-gynecologist at Borealis Life, whose work emphasizes trauma-informed, healing-centered care and a whole-person approach to women's health. In this next segment, we'll begin to shift our focus to uterine fibroids. Okay, before we go into fibroids, let's just continue with endometriosis about treatment and or first diagnosis. How is it diagnosed? And then how do you consider whether you're doing hormonal medical treatment versus surgical treatment? Who wants to tackle that question?
Dr. Lindman.
Okay, I'll go. I could talk forever about this stuff, but I mentioned, I kind of referred to this earlier, but I think that our guidelines for diagnosing endometriosis are too stringent. It's classically been you have to have a laparoscopy to diagnose that. That's a big step. Having surgery is not a small thing. It's expensive. There's risk. There's time out of work. And I think that we're doing a disservice to patients. And that's one of the things that's leading to a slower, longer time to make that diagnosis, because people have to get desperate to the point that they're willing to have surgery to find out the diagnosis, which is a higher threshold than it needs to be. I think that if we just listen carefully, patients will like they'll just walk you to the diagnosis. You just ask the right questions and open your ears and just take a moment to let them tell their story. And they just walk you to the diagnosis. A lot of times it's so obvious. It's painfully obvious. Sorry for the pun. I didn't mean to do that. But it's a constellation of symptoms, but it's really based on the primary thing is painful, severely painful periods. And patients get to decide, like Dr. Small was saying, like what's normal for them or not. Most patients have felt like something was not normal for years and years and years before they finally get diagnosed with endometriosis. So then the initial conversation is just getting a sense of their experience with their pain, all the different symptoms that might be involved. And then a lot of times they would have tried some other medications, but I just ask that people kind of hear me out in terms of all the different medications that there are to be used. And sometimes they've tried some and they have a bad experience or they maybe just don't feel like trying something. And we talk about all the different options and see if there's something there that they feel safe in their experience that they would want to try. It's not just medications. There's other things that can be helpful. Like there are supplements that can be helpful. Pelvic floor physical therapy can be helpful. I think if you're able to exercise and do yoga, then that can be helpful. There's a mindfulness can be helpful. So there's a lot of different things that can be helpful for endometriosis. The people that in general in medicine, you want to maximize the non-surgical things. Talk about all those things. Try to get a plan that incorporates all this in a very comprehensive fashion. And at some point, if things aren't working, then we'll proceed to do the laparoscopy. But I am perfectly willing to make the diagnosis of endometriosis without having to do a laparoscopy. And I think that we should just be going in that direction. It's really not complicated. And I can say, based on my experience, there are probably 98% of people that I think have endometriosis actually have endometriosis. It's extremely unlikely to find. That's people's biggest concern, honestly, when going into surgery, is that what if you don't find endometriosis? Mm-hmm. And I say, let's not think about that. Let's just get through that and we'll talk on the other side of the surgery. But that's a very unlikely. And people like break down in the recovery room crying, just knowing that they have, like, they're so thankful to have the disease. Like, who wants to have a disease? But at least there's something that they can put their hat on. They can, it validates their whole experience. They've been told that this is just normal for 7 years, 10 years, 11 years. They knew that wasn't normal. And it finally gives them that validation, you know, see, I was right the whole time. So it's very validating to officially, even though I'm trying to tell them you have endometriosis before the surgery, it's when you get that final go ahead, then that's when people finally kind of break down and feel, you know, vindicated. And then can have a lot of, I don't know, like bad feelings towards the medical system related to that.
Yeah, I can see how that validation would be very powerful. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think people would be surprised to hear you as a surgeon saying that you try these other things before surgery, that's not your first step. I think most people, you know, maybe a big misconception that they think that a surgeon will say, oh, yes, we need to go to surgery. I hear that all the time. They just think, they assume that you will want to take them into surgery.
No, usually it's the other way around. Usually people have been suffering for a long time and they've kind of decided they want to have surgery. They tried all kinds of different things. By the time they get to us at this point, we're trying to get it so we can see people sooner in the process before it's become so dysfunctional and their lives are so disrupted. The one advantage of surgery is that tends to work a little faster. So people have to have patience to try one more thing. And when you try something, you have to give it a couple of months because it's not going to work in the first day or two. Like, people understand that. So it's really that they're so desperately like have so much dysfunction and so desperate that they just want to feel better sooner. So we really hope that if we can get the word out, like programs like this and advocacy by people like you, Dr. Woodruff, that we can see people sooner. And man, if we could like decrease our need to do surgery, then that would be fantastic.
Right. Well, I am going to go to a caller, and then afterwards I want to be sure to ask you about the protocol that you are instrumental in putting together for ultrasound evaluation. But first, let's go to Olivia, who is calling from Fairbanks. Olivia, you're on line one. Welcome.
Hi. Yeah, I'm super happy to be here. Thank you.
Yes, thank you for calling. What do you want to share with us today?
Well, first off, I am a standing patient with Dr. Lindemann. We've only met virtually back in November, but I just want to praise the practice that he's incorporating into this environment. And I just want to, you know, state that for anybody else who might be thinking that they are dealing with this, please go see him. But yeah, I've had a really long and extensive journey with endometriosis. I saw four doctors before I had one who was willing to explore the concept and what actually tipped us over the edge to me getting the laparoscopy was that I had a polyp and I wanted to try having a child. And so it was like that particular dialogue that got me in the operating room, which of course, as Dr. Lindemann had just said, is kind of like the last option now that we're learning. But time to diagnosis took forever. And I do think that part of that is because so many physicians see birth control as a way to kind of like remedy the challenges that we face with endometriosis. But Dr. Lindemann actually had used this analogy, and it really stuck with me. He said that birth control is kind of like taking the foot off of the gas, and there are other treatment offerings that put the foot on the brake. And that really stood out to me. I had my IUD removed within a couple of months after that because I want to try alternative methods. So, yeah, I'm going the supplements route. I'm doing lots of yoga, and it is helping. But the timing of this is amazing because I'm on my fourth cycle starting today after getting that IUD removed, and it is really painful. So, yeah, I just wanted to relate to other folks who might be listening and let them know that there is hope, but it's not without its challenges for sure.
Thanks for sharing that, Olivia, and we wish you all of the success on your journey. We hope we get an update. Perhaps Dr. Lindemann, you'll give him permission to share with us. Dr. Lindemann, I like that treatment analogy she shared. Is that something that you typically share?
Oh, yeah, I do. Yeah. And it's related to birth control. I think so many doctors just kind of throw people on birth control. And it can be helpful for some people. But I do think that there are other medications that can work better than birth control. So the way that birth control works is estrogen causes endometriosis to grow. And when people ovulate, they make a lot of estrogen. So by stopping ovulation, we're kind of lowering the levels of estrogen. But it's not, I don't think of birth control is directly suppressing endometriosis as much as some other medications. So I think of the birth control options as being kind of tier one, and it's something that people are kind of used to using. It's easy to do. But honestly, most people have already tried multiple different types of birth control before they get to us. So that whole tier one thing has already been used for the most part. But we go back here, we talk about all the different options all over again.
Okay.
So glad to hear from Olivia.
Yes, we do have an email that we received as well from Elaine in Anchorage. She has two questions. Does early diagnosis and management of endometriosis help prevent the need for surgery later, such as hysterectomy, or prevent the spread of disease to other parts of the body? And then the second question, once a hysterectomy is performed to eliminate endometriosis, can a person still have medical issues or symptoms related to it? Oh, those are good questions, Elaine. Who wants to tackle that? Speak up.
You can go ahead.
I mean, go ahead, Shiloh. can do this.
Okay. Well, what was the first? Can you read the first question again?
I sure can. It is, does early diagnosis and management of endometriosis help prevent the need for surgery later, such as hysterectomy?
I think it can. Just looking at surgery as one thing, but when women are dealing with this and don't have a diagnosis or aren't being listened to, it can take a toll on mental health, just your whole being. So I think knowing about it or having at least talked about endometriosis at some point is helpful. And you can suppress it with certain medications, so that might help keep you, you know, out of the operating room. But I think just being more aware of it and validating women's symptoms and concerns early on is helpful, because by the time we see women, it can be very emotional for them to even be heard for the first time, or to even being able to talk about these symptoms and not having them be normalized, and I think that having that early on would be very helpful for all aspects. The second question was?
Well, the second one is, once a hysterectomy is performed to eliminate endometriosis, can a person still have medical issues or symptoms? Which I think you kind of already answered.
Yeah, you can. Mm-hmm. So endometriosis is really thought to be fed by estrogen. And if we're leaving ovaries, which we typically are, especially in young women, you can definitely have recurrence of endometriosis after having your uterus out. So just taking out your uterus is not always going to fix things.
And then I think also maybe it's important to have you talk about endometriosis in terms of what it's doing inside. So when you have these, you talked about the cells inside, the lining spreading mm-hmm. outside, but what happens when they attach to the bladder, the bowel, the sidewalls, and as far as how it can form, you know, scar tissue. Mm-hmm. And so maybe take us further and tell us about what it actually does after it moves outside the uterus.
Sure. So it causes lots of inflammation. It changes anatomy. It makes everything kind of stick together. Mm. It changes tissue planes, and it can, that chronic inflammation, like Dr. Lindemann said, it causes lots of fatigue in women, bloating, definitely. So there's a lot more that can be, lot more symptoms that can be attributed to endometriosis, and not just, you know, being a woman or, you know, being told this is normal.
Right. So then even if you remove those implants that you can remove, you may still have some, you know, other places, right?
Scar tissue. And even if you go in and have a resection of endometriosis, even using robotic assist with great optics, you can miss things because they can, you know, be microscopic at that point. And so, you know, you can see that continue to grow even after you have a resection.
Right.
Endometriosis.
And then you don't want to do surgery after surgery.
Exactly.
After surgery.
Yes.
So even after you have surgery, you do need some ongoing
yes.
treatment. And that may not be very well understood, that, you know, the journey's not over because you've had the surgery.
Right. And I think that's important to talk about before surgery, and to talk about our plan after surgery and how we can optimize things and, you know, prevent that latency time for recurrence, or prevent recurrence altogether.
Are you finding it to be true at the time of surgery that the amount of endometriosis implants that you see doesn't correlate to the amount of pain they have?
Yes, a lot of times. And I think that's difficult for women to understand sometimes, because they'll ask, well, what was my stage? And, you know, thinking if it's all over the place, then it's got to be worse. But not necessarily. You can have a small amount of endometriosis and still have tremendous symptoms and pain. So I think getting away from that thought is important as well, as everyone's different. Everyone's body is different.
It's very much so. And the way people experience pain is so different.
Exactly.
Too, right?
Yes.
And I've seen that in surgery where there's endometriosis everywhere and the person didn't have any
no symptoms.
Appreciable symptoms.
Yes, it's like, yes, we just
wow.
don't know enough about the disease, unfortunately,
yes.
either.
Yes.
There's a lot we don't know.
Well, we do have another phone call. So we're going to go to that, and then we'll see if we need to speak more about what have we not covered with endometriosis, because we do want to talk a little bit about fibroids before we're done today. So let's welcome Donna from Eagle River with her question. Welcome to Line One.
Thank you. Thank you all. I had an interesting experience. I had a C-section with my last kid in 1994. And they took part of the fallopian tubes and they, you know, removed it because they didn't want me to have kids anymore. Anyway, after that, I'd get my cycles 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off. And it was annoying, but I wasn't in a relationship anymore. It didn't matter. They wanted to put me on birth control right away. But it kept getting worse. It kept getting worse. And then in 2008, I was like basically hemorrhaging. I was getting shocky. I felt awful. I had to go to the emergency room. And they didn't know what was going on inside of me. My stomach was hard as a rock and distended. I gained like 10 pounds in a few weeks. It was just fluid in my gut. So they went in there and turned out that my ovary had walled itself off a long time ago. And it looked like it would spit out periodically, pus and stuff. But it was a sterile abscess. There was no germs ever able to get out of there. But that it caused a lot of irritation. Every time I'd run or jog or something and jostle it, I'd feel sick again because I'd feel, you know, they'd be spitting crap into my abdominal cavity. So when they went into energy surgery, the ovary had walled itself off and it actually burst the day I went in there, almost like a burst appendix. It was really quite serious. And they didn't know what they were going to see when they got in there. So I said, just take out what you got to take out. It was more like an exploratory surgery. And they took out the ovary, the one ovary, and that was it. I still got the other ovary and all the other good stuff. But to this day, that was in 2008 that happened. I've never found out why it happened, and I was always wondering, why would that happen?
Okay. Thank you for sharing that. That is very scary, so I'm glad that you're okay. Now, that can happen, you know, Dr. Lindemann, you can have a cyst of endometriosis. I don't know if that was quite what she had. It sounds like she had more of an abscess that happened there. What can you tell us about this?
Well, first of all, thanks for sharing your story. It sounds like, you know, it wasn't a very good experience of experiencing that, but also the whole diagnostic process, which is really typical of endometriosis, but just women's health in general. But it's really hard to say. You'd have to kind of look at their records to know what is going on. If they're the idea of a sterile abscess, like what would make them say that? Was it potentially endometriosis or just a fluid collection with scar tissue? If there's scar tissue, it usually would be something causing inflammation, either like a history of an abscess, either an appendicitis or some other reason to have an infection unrelated to the ovary that then caused scar tissue on the ovary, or just having endometriosis can cause a lot of scar tissue. So it's hard to know exactly what happened there, but I'm sure glad that you're okay.
Right, absolutely. I think sometimes it's really difficult to make that diagnosis in hindsight. You know, you have your pathology that you send, and so they give you the diagnosis of what that is. But as far as why it happened, it's really tough. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't go back really and figure it out. It's just really moving forward. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things she said was about they wanted to put her on birth control, or she wasn't interested in, you know, needing to, you know, wanting to have more children. And I think sometimes when we use those, I hate the word birth control, because it just, it's like, it's hormonal medication, right? And so sometimes I think that throws people off, and then they may not even want to pursue other treatment options because they hear birth control and they know I'm not interested in that, or I don't need that. Mm-hmm. And then they don't get treatment for something, you know, having a period every 2 weeks is something that should be managed, mm-hmm. you know, and treated. But if you're afraid that you're just going to be given this one option that is not in line with your goals, you know, it can cause detrimental effects later.
Yeah.
Right? We do have to take another break, and there's just so much more to talk about this subject. So let's pause here. And when we return, we'll continue our discussion. You're listening to Line One, Your Health Connection on Alaska Public Media. Welcome back to Line One. I'm your host, Dr. Jillian Woodruff. Our experts today are Dr. Matthew Lindemann and Dr. Shiloh Small, both board-certified gynecologists specializing in the treatment of endometriosis and fibroids at Borealis Life, the Laparoscopic Institute for Fibroids and Endometriosis, with offices in Anchorage and Wasilla. Okay, So I do not know that we will be able to get to the fibroids because there's a lot more to cover with endometriosis. And we have another email. This one is from Sarah. And Sarah says that her sister had surgery for endometriosis and her surgeon used the Da Vinci robot for the surgery. And she spent a lot of time researching surgeons and was surprised to learn some don't use the robot for this very invasive surgery. The benefits include 3D vision for the surgeon and better vision to identify lesions. So can you talk to us about robotic surgery and how patients can learn more about if robotic surgery is needed for their condition? And do you know if most GYNs in Alaska are using this surgery technique? Good questions. Well, I will say there are a lot of surgeons that use the robot and many who do not when it comes to gynecology surgery here in Alaska. For endometriosis surgery, I think people are leaning towards using the robot. What's been your experience here in Alaska?
Yeah, I can speak to that. I think the robot or the Da Vinci is very helpful, especially for endometriosis resection because of where it usually is in the pelvis. The robot allows you to have better vision, just being able to have almost like 360 access to, with your instruments and not like traditional laparoscopy. So it's also, women do so much better afterwards. So post-op recovery is so much better for women. They're being able to be discharged from the surgery center or hospital the same day, even after a hysterectomy and a resection of endometriosis. So I think it's just going to become the standard of care.
Right.
Can I speak it to this? Is that okay,
Dr. Of course.
We have time. So yeah, I've done probably 3,000 endometriosis resections without the robot and now probably 300 with the robot. And I can definitively say that it's better. Like I really will not do endometriosis resection without a robot anymore. The visualization is so much better. You can see the lesions better. You can see the anatomy better. You can have, like Dr. Small was saying, like we have with the robot, we have wrists so we can use our hands. The movements we make with the robot internally is the exact same motion we make with our hands if we're doing an open surgery. So we have much more delicate access to all the different parts of the pelvis much more easily, much more safely. We also have access from both sides. I'm not dependent on an assistant surgeon. I can hold everything, retract everything, and do everything just with one person versus trying to coordinate with another surgeon. It's kind of like mid-air refueling. It's just better if we can one person control.
I've not heard that before. Mid-air refueling. So that's what laparoscopic surgery with the two surgeons. You do have to kind of anticipate what the other surgeon needs. And when that doesn't happen, that's very frustrating. So interesting. Thank you for sharing that analogy.
Yeah. So I think it's in my hands, at least I know it's the better way. I feel very convinced of that. I encourage other surgeons to explore the use of the robot specifically for that. I can't say that it's the best thing for each individual surgeon. Each surgeon has to kind of make those decisions. But I can say, I think the potential for doing more advanced laparoscopy is better. There's a higher ceiling with the robot.
Well, Dr. Lindemann, you've mentioned a shift toward what's being called complex benign gynecology. How should we think about that? Does this build on, or is it different from what we've traditionally known as minimally invasive gynecologic surgery, or MIGS?
Yeah, no, I appreciate you bringing that up. Yeah, it's been termed MIGS for 20 years or more. There's been fellowships in this, and it's been a shift nationally to recognize the role, because it's not just, like MIGS kind of would make you think that it's really about the approach that is unique among for MIG surgeons, but it's really not just the approach, but the different disease processes that are being treated. So we're thinking of it as complex benign gynecology. And I think things are just going in that direction. OBGYN is a very diffuse field to deliver babies and do all, have all the skills necessary for that. And then think about all the different medications we use for different things and hormones, and then to have like the surgical skills to treat all these complex diseases. It's really it's really hard to have one person that in 4 years can be adequately trained to do all these things. So I think the field is starting to differentiate itself, and I think it's going to continue to grow in that direction. Of course, there's specialists in cancer that have more kind of complex surgeries. So we distinguish complex benign gynecology. So it's not just like non-cancerous complex surgery. And endometriosis actually can act. I don't want anybody to think that endometriosis is cancer, but the effect that it has on tissue can be very similar to what cancer does, and can be very, very tricky, especially when it's diagnosed in later stages, when we usually see people that's already, you know, growing something called deep infiltrating endometriosis, where it's starting to grow into the walls of other organs, and then to try to dissect that off. And it's a disease that it pulls the things towards it. So it grows a nodule, and then it just latches onto the ureter and just pulls that right up against it. So then you end up having to just dissect these very like nodular scar tissue lesions off of these the other organs. So yes. It can be very complex, and I think it deserves a field of its own. So that's what we're calling complex benign gynecology.
I know our GYN oncology surgeons here in Alaska have done many operations on endometriosis. These are very complex surgeries. And like you said, they're not cancers, but they're complex surgeries. And so they have done these procedures. When you're talking about the complex benign gynecology, it's a subspecialty. Is this subspecialty going to be a surgical subspecialty, or is it really dealing with this condition and other, is it more medical based?
I think that's the distinction we're trying to make, is it's not just about the surgical approach, but a comprehensive approach to the disease that includes a more advanced
expertise. Care.
And yeah. It's not a sub, they're there for like a, what's that?
Oh no, I was agreeing, more advanced care.
Exactly. So there are four different official subspecialties in OBGYN at this point, and MIGS or complex benign gynecology is not one of those quite yet, but there is, and Dr. Small mentioned it or referred to it earlier, there's a special board exam that I did 3 years ago in anticipation of my move and, you know, forming this clinic. It's called a focused practice designation in OBGYN. So I submitted a case list to the national board, and then positioned myself to take the board exam, which is an official 100-question national. It's like all the different kind of board exams that all doctors have taken. It was an official test and an official testing site where you have to like put your finger, you know, on the sensor and all that. So I passed that. So I qualify as an expert in that way. And I think it's just moving in the direction of this being a fifth subspecialty of OBGYN, mm-hmm. and that will require an actual fellowship, probably a 3-year fellowship. Most of those fellowships in OBGYN are, so you do 4 years of OBGYN and then 3 years of a fellowship. So and it's not like they, not just to the surgical, yes, the surgical aspects of it, but that's one thing that we could distinguish from the oncologists. Like, they obviously are very fantastic surgeons and are perfectly capable of doing these, but also there's only three in Alaska. So, and there's plenty of cancers they should be operating on. Mm-hmm. And then also do they know about the treatment, medical treatment leading up to the surgery? Do they understand the comprehensive approach to this? They understand how do we prevent this disease, from recurring? Those are the kind of things that oncologists might not have as much, experience and training in trying to decide.
Well, thank you so much. We are out of time. We're going to have you back, because this is obviously a very complex subject. So thank you to both of our experts, Dr. Matthew Lindemann, Dr. Shiloh Small, for being with us and sharing your insights. Thank you to our audio engineer, Crystal Hyde, and our producer, Annie Feit. You can find more information on this and previous programs at alaskapublic.org. We always welcome your thoughts and suggestions at line1@alaskapublic.org. Thanks. That's it for today. From Line One, your health connection, I'm your host, Dr. Jillian Woodruff.
Line One is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants, and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Learn more about Line One and listen online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.